folks. It's the Infuse Show. We're coming to you from the land of ice and snow. The Infuse Show doing a little misty mountain hop from the beautiful Old Forge portion of New York here, the jewel of the Adirondacks. We're here in Old Forge, guys. Hi, Mike. Hi, Francesca.
Hello.
Hi.
That was a strong opening, Nick.
It was.
Man, like, out of nowhere, you brought the snow, you brought the state, you brought the town.
I'm loving a beautiful scene.
I'm loving this place.
Beautiful scene. And the fact that it's not just us here.
It's not just us.
For once, we have more.
We have our whole team up here.
Yep.
We do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have Ashley.
Studio audience of three.
Mm-hmm. Ashley and Megan are bringing it. And of course, the man who makes the trains run on time, Frankie Fifth Year, is here, producer extraordinaire.
I'm doing
really well settling into this lifestyle. I was over at Dakers last night.
You were?
Yeah. Yeah. Had a little Utica Select.
Utica.
Nice
Utica
Club.
Nice little
Utica
thing
Club
up here.
For those who know.
Yeah. But it was great. Jay was taking care of us. He was a great bartender. We were talking a little Wu-Tang with him. Hi, Jay. Hi, Dakers. And I had a great little run-in where an old woman came over to me when I was on my way to the bathroom, and she was like, "Sweetie, it broke my heart when your character died in The Perfect Storm." And I was like, I held her hand, and so I've got the mountain get-up, I guess, or I don't know what I'm doing.
You had the bib snow pants and the ski cap, and it was like, and then this gray, charcoal gray, black, like, aesthetic going. He could have totally rocked Lighthouse, Snow Guy. It was so true, so dead on.
It's weird being here in February, because I think the last time we recorded something, it was just us, just our crew. We had a wonderful guest last month with Andrew from Eternal Hemp. But last time we were recording something in the dead portion of that fourth quarter, if you remember. We recorded a little message for Sales Joint people.
That's right.
Talking about, you know, that fourth quarter is tough, man. That we wanted to thank people for kind of sticking with the Sales Joint through the slow season. Man, the slow season's not so slow anymore. Yeah. Business is back.
Balls to the wall. Let's go.
Yeah, business is back. A lot of people in our industry are doing well, but we also know that a lot of people in our industry are still struggling right now. Correct? Right. I mean, it's a tough time.
Yeah, yeah. We're on social network Facebook groups to make sure that we're keeping a finger on the pulse of every market that we're in. And we want to make sure that we're answering needs that we get direct from, you know, people's mouths. Mm-hmm. And we're hearing all the time about, like, places closing, grows for sale. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, things are good for some, but things are different.
Yeah. It's a little different. I think that the one thing we'll never do for the good people that do follow us and tune into this, or tune in, look at me, that listen to Infuse, is we're never going to whitewash the industry. We're going to cover it from both sides. We're going to tell you the truth. And one thing that we're really conscious of right now, in today's climate in our industry, we're looking at one problem, the three of us, that really leads to a multitude of other problems in the cannabis industry. And that, Mike, I think you termed it this when we were doing pre-show. It's the big disconnect,
right,
in this business. And that big disconnect is in the supply chain between cultivators and processors who we work with, and also the retailers who they want to work with.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. You know, it's one of those things that I think, at least from my perspective, I worked in a lot of different industries in the course of my career. And supply chain is the type of, like, topic that not a lot of people talk about, mm-hmm. but it is the absolute backbone of success in an industry, in terms of being able to effectively, efficiently, cohesively move product from one end, you know, from the start to the finish. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, for so in this business, it's the seed to the consumer.
Yeah.
Getting it through that whole supply chain, whether that's a two or three hands in the pot, or like in the case of California, you got five people who got their hands in the pot. But, like, getting product from A to B is critical. And I think, you know, the more that we've been in this industry, and the more we've been able to talk to people and learn about what's happening in different states, the more it's become very apparent to me that the immaturity of the cannabis industry as a whole is really what's holding back the supply chain from effectively functioning. And I think it's a challenge, but it's also, I think, what we really wanted, like, delve into today was just, like, it's not a death sentence either.
No.
There's ways to fix that. There's ways to improve it. There's ways to coordinate and partner with people who are the right types of people. And it can be fixed, but until it's recognized and addressed, it's gonna break the back of this industry.
Absolutely.
I couldn't have said it better. And I think it's really interesting. Something you said in the very beginning of your answer was that it's the supply chain and we don't talk about it a lot. And I think maybe the reason we don't talk about it is it's not sexy. It's not really, and it's not really something we've ever had to create again. Like the cannabis is the first new industry in like of any significance in how long that has an actual product is like a CPG.
Right.
So they don't even realize they don't have to reinvent the supply chain, but they've got to have a supply chain. Yeah. They've got to and recognize what
it is.
And
I think the other part, too, is, like, if you think about anything you're used to buying as a consumer, mm-hmm. the supply chain's established, and that shit's been established for decades.
Yep.
Like, so it's like, you go to Costco, you go to the grocery store, you go to whatever, you go to Amazon, like, wherever. Like, that's a well-oiled machine of getting product in your hands and into your home, right? Like, so
the model is there, but but what other industry is federally illegal and has to establish supply chains?
Yeah.
State by state. Yeah. And so I think that's a big part of the problem.
Yeah, because all these states are they're inventing a new wheel.
Yes.
With something that was deemed illicit the week before, the year before, the day before.
Right.
So it's a really complicated problem for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And it's really, I think what people need to understand about our unique perspective at Infused is there's no sides here. There's no good guy and bad guy. There's just two opinions, right? And the cool thing about it, you said something to this effect, Mike, is, look, if we can identify the problem, that also means we can take steps at alleviating that problem, fixing that problem entirely.
Address it and move forward.
Absolutely. Yeah. So that's the cool thing. I always think that we work with cultivators and processors. We work with retailers. We work with dispensaries. We love both these groups, right?
In a lot of ways, I feel like we're almost like the sounding board or like the psychologist because everybody wants
Dr. Melfi.
Like everybody wants to vent about what's wrong and mm-hmm. what somebody else is doing that's not great for them.
And we don't have a dog have in a the horse. Fight. Yeah, yeah. We don't. And no. So we're like, oh, well, everybody's got a point. But, you know, eventually you got to come to something, guys. You can't just keep, you know,
for everybody's benefit, let's come to a conclusion and figure out the best way
that
we can all work together.
Yeah.
Ultimately, that's what everybody goddamn wants.
That's what makes small business cannabis win.
Exactly. Yep. From our perspective, it's like we're little kids and we want mom and dad to stop fighting and get back together.
Yeah, that's basically because we work with both. You're right.
Because we work with both and we work to establish relationships with both. So today we're going to examine three issues that this big disconnect is highlighting for us and things that are problematic in the industry right now. And the first one we wanted to go to today was just about communicate and how these groups of people in our industry are communicating. So we're looking at what's problematic. Mike, you talk to a lot of cultivators, you prospect, you get emails from these people. What kind of things are they expressing to you? What are their frustrations? What's problematic about communicating?
It's a communication in the cannabis world between cultivators / processors, like the supply side to the sales side, which is like going to either rec or medical dispensaries. Like that's the one that's fascinating to me.
Yeah.
Because you're right. I mean, I talk to a lot. Francesca talks to a lot of them. Frank is on the phone constantly with people on both sides of it. And we hear a lot of the same stuff, which is just a frustration around communication. And they don't really see it as communication. A lot of times what we hear from people is like, I went to the store and the person wasn't there. Or I did mm-hmm. this and the purchasing manager wasn't there. And he said he was going to be there and this and that.
Yeah.
Like, or I went there and they were busy and I had to wait. And they didn't want samples or they did want samples. And what it really all boils down to is just a communication barrier.
Yeah.
And I think I don't know whether it's a, like a fear of communicating or like people not being confident enough to just pick up the phone and call. and have a conversation.
Like, they summon all their courage to walk in the door to make the sale. They can't possibly, like, call and, like, divorce.
Or they'll send an email.
Yeah.
And they didn't answer my email, so I don't know whether I should go or not go.
Yeah.
Or maybe I'll go, or maybe I'll just get in my car and drive around for 2 weeks at a time.
Yeah.
And with a bunch of samples in my trunk. And like, that works, but it doesn't work. Like, it works if you're just trying to put mileage on your car.
Yeah.
It doesn't work if you're trying to build a business.
Well, we've worked with growers, too, that have been like, it's a badge of honor. That they, hey, I wrote them an email. Like, that's not how you...
That's not
you
shit.
That's not closing the deal.
Like, that's... Yeah, that's not... That's not... That doesn't cut it. Like, a relationship is what you want to build. Like, it's not a
And that's founded on communication.
I think, like... When if we think about how we view sales, we view a sale is the start of a relationship. Right. Sales is a one-time thing. Like, I don't give a shit about one sale. What I care about is hundreds of sales over time. And I care about getting to know my customers, and where when it's their kid's birthday, like, or their kid's wedding, that I know about it and I'm there.
Yeah.
That's a relationship.
Oh, big time.
That's business. At the highest level.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're looking at transactionally only, you're missing the boat on like what's really matters in terms of trying to build a business.
Well, can I say, I feel like from the dispensary side of things, what I hear from the people that we call to ask what is it that you need and to fulfill the hot sheet. Like, when we're making those calls, we hear their complaints. And one of the first complaints we heard was that they are bombarded by growers and people that are trying to peddle product to them that they never asked for, that they don't know these people. They show up without appointments. They show up without testing. They show up without saying it's like they keep invading their days. And meanwhile, the growers are saying, like, I tried. I thought I'd give it a shot. At least I'm taking a shot. I'm doing a sales call. I'm doing my job. Whereas there's a big miscommunication on what do they expect from each other?
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And so I guess, how do you fix that then?
Well, I think this is the supply chain problem.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't a standardized process. And I think there's going to be a lot of benefit to having a largely standardized process, for the sale process from the farm to the retail level. They should have most people, or the stores need to set the standards and be like, to get to me, you have to have an appointment. Have this, have that, have the testing, have the samples. Whatever your process is, decide it and then communicate it. And then growers, stop trying to just randomize your day in your sales by hoping somebody's there. Now you know where people are. Everybody knows you're supposed to come there. Everybody agrees we want something from each other. Let's see if we're a good fit. I feel how do you lose with that?
Yeah, I agree with everything you said. And I think where it boils down to for me is a mutual respect. A respect for each other's times, each other's business that everybody's bringing to the table, because there's no dispensary without cultivators, and there's no cultivators without dispensary unless you're a vertical. But for most people out there, they need, it's a symbiotic relationship.
Sure.
And they need each other. So it's a matter of how do you work together effectively in a way that everybody likes. And I think that a lot of, or at least where the gap that I see a lot of people, when it boils down to, is they don't have this common respect for each other to say, listen, I'm not going to blindside you with an unscheduled visit. Or if we do schedule a visit, we're both going to be there. Because what do we hear a lot of is that.
Both cultivators and dispensaries blow off appointments.
It was supposed to be a 2:00 appointment.
So then
I got there and nobody was there.
Nobody's playing by the same rules, which is why standardization isn't the man, and it's not corporate. It's the supply chain.
Good call.
So,
well, here's the thing, too. So a lot of the industry is like, I don't want to be corporate. I don't want to be like this and that. But being corporate doesn't mean not being professional and not being a pro.
Huge
and not
difference.
Having respect.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing that I continue to see is people treating this like a hobby and not treating it like a business and not treating it like a professional place where we're all eating dinner. We're all here to make money and support our families and to do that stuff. And to not treat it that way is a disservice to the entire industry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's not being cool. It's not that all of a sudden, like, oh, it's, I'm going to be casual about it. Fuck that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you just, it's funny. You did a couple of things here. You fired, it's like we were playing the game Battleship and you somehow had a nuclear missile using that symbiotic line. So just know she's going to want to kill you after this. But it's funny that the people can't get this thing. I think there is an inherent fear of picking up the damn phone, even when it's the right move. Frank and I were moving weed for a grower in I-502 country, hi Washington, and I remember the guy saying, "We're just gonna fill this order with whatever we have. I don't have the strain they ordered." I was like, "You should call that dispensary. I'll write him an email, dude. That's not an email. You need to get on the phone. That person needs to hear you. He needs to hear the contrition. He needs to hear the contrition in your voice when you say, 'I'm sorry.'" Don't just do that, because it is a relationship.
Because you know it's going to be important to them, so treat it with the importance it is. And so be like, listen, I got to get out in front of this. I know I sold you this. I don't have that. I have this instead. It's, you're giving them the power by letting them make the buying decision again. Yes, it's scary. Yes, you want your money. You already did this sale. But guess what? You lost the sale by not having the right product. So it's time to make the sale again. And you do that so much better when you're honest and it's immediate and it's urgent and it's professional.
Absolutely.
That's how you do it. So don't be passive about this. This is your business. Be in front of it.
There it is. So if we're going into this, and honestly, like, the dispensary is where the transaction goes down, right? It's where money changes hands. Let's talk about money then. Because this, and I know this is one both of you have been seeing a lot. Let's talk about prices. Because this is another, our mom and our dad are fighting over this one, and we just want to go to Dairy Queen.
Yeah, we see a lot of talk. It very much pits an us versus them situation with dispensaries, with the retail side and the supply side, because what the suppliers see is different than what the dispensaries actually see. So the I know what I hear from dispensaries is like, growers don't understand. They only see the MSRP. They don't realize we carry overhead. We have staff. We have a profit margin we have to make. We have the POS software. We have all these other insurances and liabilities and these things that we have to pay, these hidden costs from them. They think we're making bank and we're not. It's not that we're leaving them out, but they won't understand math. And so they feel defensive and justifying of the profit that they make. It's sad, because that's the relationship you want with your supplier.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
The suppliers
shouldn't we all be working to help each other make a profit from this?
One would think.
You know, it's interesting. Like, what you said is exactly what we hear tons of in terms of the disconnect between, like, what people think their product is worth and what it's really worth, and why they think somebody else is making more than they should be. And it's very prominent in cannabis space. It really is. And again, I'm going to go back to what I said in the first kind of talk we had. It's because the supply chain is immature. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like everybody in the supply chain hasn't figured out exactly what their value is yet. Ooh. and understand, like, okay, well, this is what it is. I'm comfortable with that, and it's going to be a range, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, so if no matter where you are in the supply chain, you know this is about what you should be expecting. Everybody thinks their product and their service is over, like, everybody overvalues what they do, from mm-hmm. the grower to the middleman to the dispensary. Everybody thinks what they're doing is better than what it really is, in my mind.
Hey, my mm-hmm. stuff sells itself.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, everybody sells itself. Everybody grows the best weed. Everybody, like, has the best store. Like, mm-hmm. you know, so, but in the reality, none of those are true. Like, everybody's got, like, a product that they should be proud of. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, there needs to be a realism around what is really worth in the marketplace. And there has to be a business that will support that.
Yeah.
And I think, by and large, the business can support that. This is a whole nother show. As long as the government doesn't overtax.
Okay.
And I think that's where things go sideways, because certain parts of the supply chain get taxed more than others and ultimately have to bear more of the the brunt of the supply.
Sure. Not to mention what happens to the supply chain when you have people dealing dually in legal markets and black markets. Okay. Or you know, we've got a ton of issues around that. But I think you're absolutely right, Mike, in that people tend to overvalue what they're doing because you know how hard you worked. So you know what you deserve, and it's never what somebody's going to pay.
Yeah.
And so that feeling on the grower side can be like, God, I'm the one doing all this work, and I'm the one growing it, and all, and it's, it is really like everything in one harvest, potentially. So I get that emotional, you know, attachment, but you have to understand the difference between having a product and having a business. You know, cannabis is your product. That what you grow is your product. You need a business behind it to actually make it in the cannabis industry. And I think that's where we see a lot of people break down, where they don't have that business piece of it.
Sure thing.
That's a great point between a product and a business, because that's like a Shark Tank scenario that comes up a lot. And, and it really is so true. And the sad part of it, really, if you think about it, because we all see this. Mm-hmm. We've seen, we've known, we've met people that are doing this for the right reason.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But they can't make a business out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it ends up breaking them. And that's like heartbreaking for us to like witness. Like have the best intention. They are busting their ass to make their farm work.
Know
their
they're
store
a good
work.
Grower. They know
they've got a great story. Everything about them is good. They're not,
but they only looked at themselves. Work. They didn't look at the market. They didn't look at the competition. They didn't look at what states had done before. They didn't look at fluctuations and anticipate reserves that they would need. They didn't realize where employee retention would be. I mean, there is so much to consider.
Tons of pitfalls.
That if you're a hobbyist, be an honest hobbyist. You don't need to be in the cannabis industry to grow cannabis. Yeah. You can grow cannabis. So it's, I mean, wouldn't you rather lose, like, you know, I guess know what you're losing rather than put all of what you have into something and without even realizing that you met, that you had all these blind spots.
Yeah, and like, so all right, different topic, but
okay.
Well,
is that part of the lure of cannabis, though? Is that part of the lure of cannabis? We talked about this here.
Like
so
all,
we're here at an offsite, a business planning offsite. One of the questions we have is, why are we here?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, don't you think every business should ask themselves that? Whether you're a cultivator, a dispensary, or a middleman, like
every healthy business,
yes.
Like, they should all be asking themselves that. Like, why are we here? Yeah. Because, like, it's not as shiny as everybody thinks it is.
It's not easy.
Oh, good Lord.
It's not easy.
Yeah. From market saturation to licensing restriction, every market brings these huge challenges that nobody talks about until you're neck deep in it sometimes.
Sure thing.
Well, and I'm not throwing shade on my accountant or my lawyer, but the cannabis support systems are 2x what it costs to do the same work for my non-cannabis businesses.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it's a grind to be in this business.
It is.
And
so, of course, we overvalue what we produce.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. And maybe. It's not, the interesting thing is, it's not, for me at least, it's not an Oklahoma problem. We're talking about price and supply. It's not a Washington problem. This is not a problem that Metric created. Everyone likes to beat that
Metric's
up.
Not even in Oklahoma.
The dispensary cultivator clash is like
it's
everywhere.
It's in every state and every market that we either prospect in or that we work in.
Right.
So that's
except for vertical states. That's the only state that doesn't have that problem.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And a
small business needs to figure out like it. What it takes for them to be in business and not have, like, I don't know, no plan and end up with only desperation.
Yeah.
Just talk.
A wise man.
That's my whole thing. Talk. Pick up the phone. Talk.
Yeah. And that's, you know,
build
that's
a relationship.
That's where you figure
take care
things.
Of everything.
That's where you figure things out too. And that's when you realize that people are just people. And talking to a guy at a dispensary in Oklahoma, and I learned that there were 15 other dispensaries in this town. And they popped up way too quick. He has too much competition. He has to sell his material for almost what he pays for. Like, he just, this man's struggling. And, you know, I think you can read the honesty there in that situation and look at his competition. And it goes back to that point. It's so funny that our points all relate pricing relates to communication. Just pick up the goddamn phone. Just talk to somebody, right? A wise man once said that the pie can never be big enough when a floor drops out of the market. I just have this list of Mike quotes.
Where did you come up with that one?
You said it during pre-show. Yeah, you
the
did.
The pie can never be yeah, big you did. Enough when the floor falls out from
it's
the market.
It's great because I'm going to win this one because it's recorded.
I said that today?
No, it's in the meeting notes.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Right. Oh, jeez. A little behind
Look,
the scenes
you know,
moment.
Here's something. Here's something.
Yeah.
True another area that I think that at least the three of us have looked at and said, oh, man, we've got to fix this. Somebody has to fix this. And maybe that's the issue here. Every healthy cannabis company from their inception, they all say, you know, Andrew was on the show last month from Eternal Hemp. He said the same thing. They have a focus on education in their company, okay? And great. I hear that from good dispensaries, too. We want to educate the patients. We want to educate. Now, who's going to take – this is a big disconnect because from where I'm sitting, no one's taking the ball and running with it. No one is taking the ball and running with it. Whose job is it to educate, Francesca?
I think it's dispensaries better be educating. I mean, you are engaging with people at the point of sale.
Right.
There is no better time or higher stakes than to educate them on what exactly they're investing in. What is the medicine that will work for them? How can they achieve their goals? So dispensaries definitely need to be educated, which means they need to bring in bud tenders that are educated, which means they need to understand the products that they carry and the plant. And there's a lot of expectation on dispensaries because you own that point of sale transaction. And you are helping the customer make the decisions like 70% of the times, I bet. So it's definitely on them because if somebody walks in and says, I am looking, I'm having trouble sleeping and I'm looking for something that's like 37% THC, what do you have? You as a bud tender better back that conversation way up and be like, hold on. I need to understand what it is you're looking for. Are you having trouble sleeping? And if that's the goal, let's look at what in the plant helps you achieve that goal and what we carry. Not, I heard this that 37% THC was good.
Guess me messed
and
up.
I have a goal, so I'm going to do these two things. We need to stop them there and make sure that they know what they're buying, why they're buying, and teach them about terpenes.
Yeah.
And teach them about how something is grown affects the final product and the kind of processing that the products are. Teach them because they'll be better consumers, and now they'll probably be loyal because guess who taught them everything they know?
Right.
Yeah.
But I 100% am on board with, like, they have the point of sale contact.
Sure.
That's an obligation, that, you know, responsibility they have to make sure people are getting the right product. But if I'm running a farm, like, to me, my branding strategy would be, I am going to be the brand. Like, I want to, if I'm a farm, what's my goal? Create pull, consumer pull for my brand.
Yeah.
So no matter what store I'm in, consumers are asking for my brand.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's, but nobody does that.
Yeah,
I'd rather sell it wholesale because I can get money real fast. No, build a brand, and one of the staples and one of the pillars of the brand should be to educate people on what you're growing, how you grow, why your grow is better, all that stuff that can educate, but also build the brand loyalty to your brand.
Sure, because what you're educating them on is your point of differentiation.
Yes.
That's what you're teaching them.
Exactly.
It's like, hey, buy my stuff because it's different. It's different in these ways. It's grown in living soil. Here's why living soil is better than all that other stuff in the dispensary. So you're achieving two goals with it by creating and
really
establishing
are.
Your brand. So absolutely cultivators need to educate.
And I think from our firsthand experience, we know that a brand can overcome deviations in quality.
Oh, yeah.
Or in spec. So, like, specifically, we were selling cookies for a while. Like, all of a sudden, Gary Payton comes in, THC and terps are low for this crop.
Yeah, a little lower than they
harvest,
were, yeah.
Right? Didn't stop people from buying.
That's right.
We sold just as much because the brand carried the weight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And people will
forgive
that. Who
taught people cookies was great? cookies.
They did a lot of stuff.
I mean,
right.
Berner, yeah. He did it because he created something that people, and then he taught them to want it.
And that's the rarity in the industry.
If you never
think
understand
about
it.
The states that we work in and the amount of farms that we work with, very few even have a logo. Very few have menus. Very few, like, it's nominal work that as much as they're going to put into the work of building the product and growing and all the science and the passion and the heart that they put into it, there's one little thing left that they don't do that makes all the difference.
It
and
does
that's
make
the part
all the
that's honestly, it's like heartbreaking for us because we know they're really,
you're right, really close. Yeah.
One step away. Take that last step. Like this is the stuff that we love to do. Like,
right.
We'll help you do it.
Yeah.
Like, build your brand. And part of that brand has to be through education of what you're doing, of what you're providing, and what you're growing, because how you grow it, to build that loyalty.
Because your customers, we're not even talking about the end user, if we're speaking supply chain language. We're not even talking about the consumer. We're talking about educate your customers as in your dispensaries. That's who your customer is. It's a B2B play for people if you're moving into the retail space. So now educating the dispensaries allows the dispensaries to be educated and pass that education on to the consumers. It's a win-win-win. It's the no one grows alone model.
You know, it's I'm glad you brought that up because if you think about some of the better dispensaries that we've visited in the course of our travels, right? You go in and you talk to a bud tender. We've all had like great bud tenders, mediocre, poor, whatever, right? But the good ones, they absolutely can steer you into a specific product.
Yeah.
And so to educate, just to make sure they're clear on your brand and your product and your grow method and all that stuff, that's gold.
Yeah.
Let alone trying to even get the consumer. So you're right. The education part isn't just B2B or B2C, which is kind of where I was thinking of it. Like
I would absolutely want to
build consumer pull. But where you took it to is also 100% valid, which is the people that are your agents and your mouthpieces, make sure they're saying the right shit.
They're your buyers, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's the disconnect, is like nobody's doing that, passing that on. So there's a disconnect from the consumer and the product and the dispensary and the communicator. It's just, it's all disconnected.
So everyone,
this is UConn.
Special guest, UConn is coming in. My 11-year-old Golden is in the house.
Yeah.
UConn, say a few words.
He's a lovely.
He's a man of few words. We'll continue.
He's a lovely boy. Yeah, can I flip the switch really, really quick?
Same
topic, though. But when are we going to get to the point where, because I know the damage that's been done, and I think that they need to make up for a lot of it, but individual states, they have no problem taking the tax money. Do they have to play a role in educating the public about cannabis now? Because they're all going to take the money. You've seen, you know.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I want your take on it.
My take on that is I wouldn't rely on the states to do a damn thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, you know, my
But no, I'm saying should they be expected?
Absolutely should.
You're going to take the money. You should invest this way.
I don't want the states telling my story.
Yeah, they take money from every business. They tax every business. Yeah. They overtax the cannabis business. And it doesn't mean that they need to educate about private businesses, but I think they...
Just about cannabis, I mean.
Yeah, I don't think so. No? I don't think so, but I think you have something in that there is a legislative education.
Yeah,
I'm
scared of what they would say.
Yeah.
And I'm scared also for what's the increase in tax going to be for them to say it? Now it's 2% more.
We saw their education. It was Reefer Madness and Prohibition. Yeah.
That was the feds. Yeah, that was the feds.
You're right. That was
state
the feds.
Markets, I think they need to be doing more everywhere, in every category here. But that's a whole other show, maybe.
Yeah, that's another show. We got to talk about states. Well,
this is going to be a nice one because Nick's on the other side of the coin on this. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I see too many barriers in our way. We're trying to make progress. And I've been at some of these lobbying days, folks, and they never go well. They never go. It just always ends up in frustration, at least in my little first state. But yeah, you guys make compelling points in both those areas. We actually have a thing that we're encouraging people to do much, much more, where people kind of ask our team and the shows where our team is on here in full force. Can I ask you guys your take on things? And this one comes from Oregon. It's a place we've been, you know, dangling a little bit.
Hey,
Matty D.
Question.
Maddie D works in a dispensary, and actually we talked a few weeks ago. But then getting in here to the hello to the Infused team. What do you hear about sampling policies? His store doesn't require any kind of appointments. You guys both brought this up on this show, so I wanted to throw this. Maddie D's doesn't require any appointments. He's wondering if that's the way to go because his business isn't that busy on these certain days. He can probably take these vendors in on these certain days. And he wants to know from the people that we work with, are people having more success just having an open door policy and saying stop by whenever you want? Or is it better to call and set up an appointment? You guys hear this one too.
We hear, yeah, we What's hear better? Both sides of this one. Mm-hmm. Well, start, you want me to start?
I think I definitely have a preference, and this is just an opinion.
Sure.
My preference is to have people, to make people have appointments because standardization and professionalism are still being established. So help establish them. That's kind of my take on it, of we can all create a stronger industry where small business can thrive through this standardization of supply chain processes. So this is the simplest, most like easiest way to do it is like, listen, you can't just come in whenever it's convenient for you. For something, oh my God, I don't know if you heard that, but that was a huge burp. UConn burp.
Are you sure that's what it was?
UConn, good cover. but I think it's like, speaking of professionalism, I think it just helps make sure everybody has the right expectations and is actually fulfilling each other's needs and not just, you know, somebody is inconvenienced and or surprised. That's right. That's might be fun, but mm-hmm. It doesn't work long term.
I'm with you on that, Francesca.
Eventually, you want to get so busy that you need these appointments, so just start out with them.
It comes back to what I said earlier. It's respect. Yeah. Respect people's time. Like, I don't want to bump in on a time where it's not convenient for you. I don't want to drive around aimlessly. Like, I don't want to show up and you're not there. Like, all those things, they can all be alleviated if people just respect each other and respect the business and be pros.
You know,
be a pro about it and say, look, hey, I'm here Tuesday, 2:00. You're coming in. I'm going to make time for you. If you're there at 2:10, yeah, fine, big deal. If you're 10, 15 minutes, like, don't come at 4.
Yeah.
Don't come Wednesday.
Yeah.
You know, and like, be a pro. Act like a professional. Treat each other with respect, and respect translates to money, because that's a relationship. Yeah. I'm going to keep going back to that. It's respect and relationship in this business. And I don't see enough of it. I just don't. Yeah.
So, Mike, what do you say when somebody is like, I'm going to speak for her.
I'm sorry, baby, can I talk?
No, I think, what if the comeback to that, not comeback, but the response to that is, what are our questioner, what is his name, Matt?
Matt,
thank God.
Maddie D.
Panicking Matt, sorry.
Not going to, he told me not to say the dispensary name. He's an assistant, but.
I said, I think it would be interesting, like, what if he's like, listen, it's not busy. Making an appointment creates a barrier to entry, and now I'm going to miss people that don't know to make an appointment. And you know, I like supporting these small guys by being open to them stopping by.
That's fine.
How do we?
There's nothing wrong with that. But I also think, it's fine to be like, hey, these times are typically when it's a downtime.
Yeah.
You know, where you'll catch me. Don't play the card of like, I'm usually here and now you're at your other business because you own a nail salon also. Because that's, we hear that one.
Yeah, we do.
Or now I own a pizza parlor, or now I do this, or now that. And this is actually, now that you call it out, I'm only here at night, two nights a week. Like, that's not fair. Mm-hmm. That's not, like, you're not treating it with respect. You're not treating it like a business. Mm-hmm. You're treating it like a side hustle. So understand who you are and be who you are, but at least be respectful.
Yeah.
For that, for everybody else, so that they're not gonna like come out and drive halfway across a state to have a meeting with you, and you're at the laundromat. Like, that's not fair. That's not respectful, and that's not business.
But what if he's not standing up these appointments? He's like, yeah, I am always here, and so you know, it's cool. Whatever, I'll be here.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah,
as long as you're there.
Yeah.
And then, but if you're
so
not
you would tell him not to set appointments.
I'm not saying don't set appointments. If you know there's times of Tuesday through Thursday and between 1 and 5 is typically our slow times, if you stop in, I'm always here. And
I love that.
There's nothing wrong with that.
I love that.
That's an open audition to come in. But don't say I'm going to be here on Friday if you know damn well you're not going to be there Friday because you have another job that you have to work Fridays at.
You know what? Come
by anytime.
Your suggestion tells me, also shows me if I'm soliciting you, if I'm trying to get my stuff in, it's like, oh, so you know your business, you run your business, you don't let your business run you. Like, you actually understand there are ebbs and flows, and like, it's also like, nobody wants to be with the person who's constantly available. You have to play a little hard to get to be like, yeah, you actually do have to meet a standard to be carried in my store.
Yeah.
The standard is I'm here on Tuesdays and Thursdays 1 to 4.
That's where it goes the other way. That's where it goes the other way, which is like, and we run into this, if we're doing what we do. We're calling stores, and you can't get a hold of a purchasing manager. And the only way to get a hold of them is they won't pick a phone up. You have to email them only. And now if you're lucky, maybe they'll email back. And, oh, if you're even luckier, maybe you can get on a phone with them. Mm-hmm. That's going the other way too much almost, mm-hmm. in my mind. I think that's the other way of unprofessional, where it's like –
what, where you create your own like little version of mousetrap for people to yes. for vendors to go through? But like, yeah, when right. the guy flips into the pan, then I'll give you a sample request.
I would rather see those people say, we're not accepting new vendors right now. We're set. Thank
okay.
you.
There it is. There it is.
In June we're gonna reassess, but for now, don't even send me an email. I'd rather see that.
Yeah.
Then to play this cat and mouse game.
So that's,
getting that, back to me.
That's where.
In this artificial wall of superiority. And
that's what
to
I love.
Me, what I really distaste. My distaste is that.
About Matt's question. I love the question because it's what we do. It's industry driven.
It is.
And it's somebody who's not managing a store
right.
thinking, could this help my store if we go in one direction or the other direction? And it's great because. As she could tell you how many times she hears this, I hear it, or yep. any of our yep. dialers, we love new vendors. We want new vendors. Okay, so what are you doing to help those new vendors get into the store? Are you right. setting aside Tuesday from 2 to 4? Are you doing this? I don't know. I think I can see both sides, but it's an interesting little thing.
To me, it's the same thing. Just be respectful of those you're doing business with.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times the dispensary people are the ones that they're the ones that control the power in the mm-hmm. situation. They can either buy or not buy, right? They're the ultimate power holders here, except for the end customer. But in the supply chain, the dispensary purchasing manager or owner
yeah.
is the person with all the power.
Yeah.
And power shifts, people. Don't forget that. Power shifts. So all those people you were rude to and stood up and all that stuff, that may not last forever.
Twice.
You know,
especially in a market based on a plant, supply and demands change.
Consumer preference changes.
Consumer preferences change.
Know,
regulations change.
Store.
Things yes. change.
Yeah. I mean,
so, yeah, create something that's enduring through all those changes.
Relationships
and standardization in the supply chain and professionalism. It's
yeah,
just,
yeah.
It's, yeah.
simple. It's simple.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Matt. What a great question.
That's why I yeah.
Thanks, Nick, for asking a great question from a
I love asking you guys questions. As much as I love asking questions to the good people from Utica Club, Pilsner Lager Beer. We're really being hams today in this Adirondacks episode of this. Guys, we're up in this beautiful area of New York in Old Forge, and I heard Mike use a term earlier that I wanted to. I was like, oh, I bet I know my man. Mike uses a term we love when he's you know what chaps my ass, and I was thinking, riding around out there on the snowmobiles, I would love to do like just a bit of like what chaps Mike's
oh,
ass,
shit.
Where he tells us. So, give me this one. As far as lake life goes, all right, life around this beautiful lake that we were all out there with on the other day. Excuse me, what's a violation up here, Mike? What chaps your ass? When you see it up and around this region.
Oh, God, man. I don't even know where to start.
He's got volumes of chapped ass stuff.
How long do we have left on the tape? you know, I think the biggest thing to me is anything, and I run into this here, and I run into it in Dewey Beach, Delaware.
Uh-oh.
Which is
parallel?
people have this vacation entitlement, which is they think they go on vacation and they can treat people crappy, give bad service, like blow up on servers. The level of expectation that they have is not realistic. And okay. So they come to a place on vacation that's like where you live full time, mm-hmm. and they just come in here and like shit can the place with bad behavior, bad expectations.
Yeah.
Their kids are assholes. Like, you know, like who knows what it's going to be. But it's, to me, is there's this, and it's a term that my wife and I, Karen and I, have developed over the years. Vacation entitlement.
Vacation entitlement. Yeah. Chapping Mike's ass up here.
That's a real chap.
Well, because they're just passing through this beautiful area. Maybe they're not going to come back or, you know. No, but you got to live.
They're going to leave. Most people leave it worse than when they came.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's the vacation entitlement.
In terms of how they treat it, how they, like, you know, just don't.
They're renters
instead
of owners. Yeah, and
so,
and
that's like, it's a disrespect.
It's a common theme.
I'm seeing a theme in my head. Damn.
You know, for an English Irish guy, that's a whole lot of Italian influence.
Yeah, seriously.
Out respect.
I thought it was, that's why I thought it was so weird when we were coming up here and we were doing our Monday morning huddle and stuff. And I'm looking at Frank's goals for the week on his projects. He had one of his projects as leaving this place worse than he found it. And I thought that's the worst thing.
That's Frank, too. Frank does that shit.
I know.
He came in. He made some cutlets the other night. There's grease everywhere.
I know.
Those cutlets were
worth
it.
Really good.
No.
Amazing.
I will. You know, for the studio audience, the cutlets are unbelievable. Like,
they live up to
the
hype.
This week was my first. I've heard about the cutlets for years.
We've mentioned them.
Hit a home run. They were delicious. I knocked one out late night when everybody was asleep. I came out of my room.
Yeah.
Went cold cutlet.
Cold cutlet. Cold cutlet style.
And I'll tell you, I slept like a baby. It was exactly what I needed to suck up some alcohol and whatever else was in my system. And it was delicious.
That's why, yeah. That's why I just have a hard time with his attitude up here. He's like, I'm just going to pee here, do whatever.
Are you talking about UConn or Frank?
Frank. Okay. No, in all honesty. And by the way, would you please do that shot of limoncello I poured you over there? It's been sitting there staring at me. It's been sitting there sitting now. I'm in cahoots with my bud Megan.
You put this over here earlier?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Sneaky.
I'm in cahoots with Megan. So thank you to my wonderful teammate, Megan.
Very nice, Megan.
But here's one thing, though.
Is
all,
it warm for when it was sitting out?
Mike just did the whole thing, guys.
Pledge never tasted so good.
Look, I do want to acknowledge that too with the stupid riff joking of mine with Frank. This whole thing is possible because of the ridiculous hard work that he put into setting us up here, hauling all this stuff up there. Frank's not Mike today, and it sucks because he's everyone's favorite part of the show usually. But we do want to make sure that we thank Frank for the cutlets and for all this wonderful work.
Great job, Frank.
Hashtag thank Frank.
Yeah, Frank did an awesome job.
Yay.
This was, you know, it's really cool to see a space transform. And Frank was so relaxed about doing it that I was like, he's going to fuck this up. And
of little faith.
But he keeps pulling it off. And I always think that. I'm like, there's no way he's going to pull this off. But he does it time after time.
I honestly never lose faith in his ability to produce this shit. Because we could be on the moon and he'd be like, oh, I figured it out. And, you know, we're beaming our transmission back or whatever. He'd always figure out a way to get the stuff running.
Producer extraordinaire.
We love it.
It's impressive.
We love it.
It really is.
Great guy. It's been great doing this up here. So we're so grateful for that. We're grateful to be up here as a team. So grateful to do a show and have Megan and Ashley in the room with us just because it just feels like we're more complete. And they help us. They help us drive content every day with what they do with the sales joint. So they help drive content for Infused. It's your home. It's your show. Your home for the kind of curious about the kind of business. This has been a lovely episode of Infused, my friends. Thanks for talking to me today.
Thanks, Nick.
Good stuff, Nick.
This is a special edition of Infused up here from the jewel of the Adirondacks here in Old Forge, New York.
The
315. We're going to see you next time from the 302. We're going to head home to the first state, to Delahoo, Delawhat, Delaware. We'll see you again. Bye-bye, guys.
Bye.